Hi guys, I know everyone is very busy today and this week with finals and everything else. Just wanted to speak briefly about the first aliyahs of Bahar and B'chukosai and give us some thoughts to reflect upon in these two parshios and some common ideas between them perhaps, and allow us to just explore these themes a little bit. So just to begin with, the parsha does talk about Shemitah in the first aliyah, Parshas Bahar. But, of course, it begins with a famous line, that Rashi has a famous line commenting at the beginning of the Parsha, because when the Parsha introduces the topic of Shemitah, by first making reference to Har Sinai, Vayedaber Hashem Moshe b'Har Sinai Lemor, so Rashi asks the question, which has become an expression, Ma'inyin Shemitah etzel Har Sinai, what does one have to do with the other? That's become a way of expressing when something seems like a non sequitur. We don't know what one thing has to do with the other, so we don't ask about the price of tea in China. We ask Ma'in Shemitah Eitzel HaSinai, what does one thing have to do with the other? So Rashi tells us that just like Shemitah, Nemru, Kolosel, Pratosev, Tisev, Misinai, so Afkula, Nemru, Kolosev, Tisev, Misinai. So that you have to figure out still, because the answer doesn't seem to be so clear. It doesn't seem to be telling us so much more. And there's a lot to discuss about the nature of the Torah being given at Sinai and giving at Arvos Moav, Menahol Moed. There's a lot to discuss about exactly how the Torah was transmitted, the topic of Rav Shechter's Sefer Divrei Sofrim, his Shiurim on the Masorah of Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebichtav, but there's a fascinating idea that Rabbi Reichman Shlita quotes in an article that he wrote about the comments of the Shem Mishmuel here, that the Shem Mishmuel notes that we have this idea that the Torah was given on Har Sinai, which is a relatively low mountain, is not a mountain but was the highest, most impressive mountain, and the question comes up, why would the Torah be given in such a context? Why shouldn't it be given on the top of the highest mountain? It's the most glorious gift. And Chazal tell us that the Torah requires modesty, that we have to be able to be humble in order to receive the Torah. So if that's the case, as he notes, so you would think, okay, so let's skip the mountain to begin with. The Torah should be given on a flat plain, or should be given in a valley. Why should the Torah be given on a mountain at all, if that's the message? And he goes on to explain that modesty isn't meaningful if you have nothing to be proud of. There are things that look like modesty that really aren't modesty, that if somebody is just very low and presenting themselves as very low because that's how they see themselves, so then that's not modesty. And if somebody on the other extreme is falsely modest in order to be manipulative, so that's also, of course, not modesty. Modesty is the balance of recognizing what you have to contribute, and also seeing it within its proper context and recognizing how it has to be integrated into the needs of the klal, which is what's highlighted at Har Sinai in the theme that we think of going into Shavuos of Vayichan, is Rashi's famous comment that the Jews were seen as one person with one heart, so seeing ourselves as a integrated community is crucial. So we, the Jews overall, are known for having strong opinions and making their thoughts heard and making their presence felt, and yet the receiving of the Torah means that we don't quiet our voices, but that we're able to fit that into the klal, we're able to appreciate how that's a part of a message that is bigger than us and that is larger than any individual. And that humble strength is what Har Sinai is conveying, and also what Shemitah is conveying, because Shemitah is directed towards the process of our making something grow out of the land, our bringing food, so to speak, out of nowhere, and bringing sustenance out of what seems to be nothing. And it can be a tremendous feeling of power, and it is a tremendous skill. But it's only there because the Kadosh Baruch Hu makes it possible. And we have to be able to recognize that and see how that restraint and that humility is necessary for the strength to actually express itself. And with that, let's just say a few words about mitzvah, Shemitah, really very few, won't keep you long, but the obligation of Shemitah of letting the land be fallow, letting the land go unworked for this year. So there are many different understandings, both halachically and hashkafically, as to what it's about. Hashkafically, it may connect to some of the halachic details. From a perspective of lamdus, there is a discussion many achronim have as to whether this is, so to speak, a mitzvah on the gavra or a mitzvah on the aretz. Is it that the land should be unworked, or is it on the individuals that they should not work the land? And it may connect to some of the different meanings that we find for the mitzvah. The Rambam, for example, in Mar Nevuchim, the Rambam understands that this is basically to give the land a rest, because the land will be more productive if we do give it a rest, if we are able to take off a little bit. And after that, then the land is going to produce more. And it's like Shabbos in that sense. We take a day off and we spiritually re-energize. The land also needs to energize, which is a fascinating idea. The Sefer Achinuch has perspectives where it's more directed towards our recognition of what the impact is, as we said before, to emphasize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the creator and that it's not us making this happen, which is also a part of the theme of Shabbos, and all of this is consistent with the language of the Pasuk of Shabbos Ha'aretz, and that this is all the language of Shabbos that we find carried over from Saturday Shabbos to the Shemitah Shabbos. Also, as the Sefer Achinuch notes, that it's about bitachon, it's an idea that we clearly find in Chazal, that this is an expression of our faith, that we will be able to trust in God, that we'll be able to survive even under these circumstances. And from a different direction, the Chinuch emphasizes a spirit of asranus, because we have to be mafkir, we have to give the food up to whoever wants to take it. And that ability to give without receiving anything is an important midah that we need to also embed within our personalities. And it's important perhaps to reflect as well that there's often a discussion, there are different political systems in the world, different economic systems in the world, there's capitalism and there's communism, there's conservatism and liberalism, there's left and there's right, there's up and there's down. So which one is the Torah value? And some will point to Shemitah and say, look here, Shemitah seems to be a very socialist initiative, that here all of the land is hefker and everyone can take, and at the end of the year all the loans get canceled, and all of these related themes. And that's true, but it's also true that for 6 out of the 7 years, so you're working and you are doing business in a normal capitalist sense. And part of what's emphasized here is that neither system is going to be the Torah system. The Torah is its own system. And whenever we try to shoehorn the Torah into some existing political philosophy or economic philosophy or the like, it's never going to fit, because the Torah is its own eternal chachma, and it has elements of whatever is necessary in order to express its own values. So it seems that within the halachic economic system, so we have a capitalist structure, but we can't let the capitalist structure be completely unmodified, that it has to come with a strong sense of communal responsibility and the importance of tzedaka, the importance of taking care of the vulnerable. All of that has to be together with the capitalist workings. Otherwise, we have, God forbid, the picture of stone that one could turn into, that some depictions of stone in Chazal, and Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, and the Gemaras in Bava Basra and Bava Kamma, stone seems to be portrayed as a place of completely unmodified capitalism, where all that matters is what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours. And we are told that we need to have a system that is capitalist and it's functioning, but is characterized by chesed and by an appreciation for social welfare, or social welfare, and never to let anyone fall behind, and never to let one system cancel out the vital elements of the other, and to think that the Torah can be equated to any one political or economic philosophy is always a mistake. And so too, we know we live here in the United States where we are a capitalist country, but we also recognize that the needs of taking care of every individual have to be partnered with that capitalist perspective, and that's something that we're feeling very strongly during this whole pandemic crisis, and it's a part of the discussion how those two aspects are harmonized and are integrated in a way that does justice to all of our values, and that's a part of the ongoing conversation. And we talk about all of our values being integrated and being respected. May I just say a few words about the Shemitah in the modern era. Nowadays, so there is a continuing debate about an approach known as the Hesed Mechira. And this year we spoke a little bit about Mechiras Chametz and a little bit about some related ideas. And it's important to know how to appreciate a topic like this. And the Hesed Mechira is extremely, extremely controversial, kind of a perpetual motion machine for Machlokas, because it was controversial when it started in the late 1800s. And every 7 years, it's a new machlokes, and there's new fuel to the machlokes, because there's different realities on the ground, whether it was the creation of the state in 1948, which certainly was a whole different landscape, or whether it's any stage of economic development and growth before that or after that. So essentially every 7 years, one side says to the other, okay, if you didn't agree with me now, then for sure you agree with me now. Now things have changed so much that you have to recognize that I'm right. So just to give a brief picture of what this machlokas is about, so the question of whether selling the land in Israel during the Shemitah year in order to absolve it from the obligations of Shemitah or to allow working the land to take place, it was very controversial, and this goes back to 1889, when that Shemitah year was 5649. So in anticipation of that year, there was this heter that was endorsed by great rabbanim such as Shmuel Mikutno and Shmuel Moliver and Shmuel Zandel Klapfish, and also our sponsor, our namesake, Rabitzko Chanan Spector. And the premise, which eventually was also associated with Rav Kook, even though Rav Kook at first was not a supporter of the Heter when he was living in Chutz Laretz, but eventually he came to feel that it was necessary, and he wrote a sefer named after the Parsha Shabbos Haaretz, and also has many tshuvas in his sefer Mishpat Kalin, where he became a defender of the Heter that he originally opposed. And just to give a little bit of background as to how exactly it works. So first of all, the premise is that Shemitah nowadays is Drabanan. Anyone who endorses the Heter works off the premise that Shemitah is Drabanan. There are those who oppose that. When they oppose the Heter, they either agree Shemitah is Drabanan and oppose it for other reasons, or feel that Shemitah is Daraisa. But certainly those who are in favor of the Heter acknowledge that it's Drabanan, which can come from a few ways, either because you maintain that Shemitah itself is Drabanan nowadays, which also can come from two ways. So one is to say that it's connected to Yovel, which is also in the Rishon of this week's Parsha, Parsha's Bahar. And the Gemara explains in the Maseches Erechin that in order for Yovel to be applicable, so you need to have Kol Yoshveha Aleha, you need to have all the Jews living in Israel, and not only living in Israel, but actually the Gemara says they have to be living in their assigned Nachalos, which is really a challenging detail. The Rambam, in Shemitah Yovel, he talks about this. You can look in Perek Yud Halacha Ches, but the other possibility we see there is that it's connected to Maestros, and the assumption that Maestros is also Drabana nowadays, because that requires a different way of seeing the Jewish population in Israel, which is Bias Kulchan, that all of the Jews have returned, which in that case, it could be, as opposed to the Yovel consideration, it could be that Rov would be enough, but even so, nowadays, whatever demographics we're watching to see if most of the Jews in the world living in Israel, probably still not satisfy the standards, because it would seem that it would need a mass aliyah, not through incremental aliyah, but people coming in large numbers to create that rope. So it's a whole discussion what exactly it's going to require. Chaim Brisker and a sefer on the Rambam, so he talks about the difference between these two possible issues in Shemitah being Daraisa, Darabanan, Bezman Hazeh. So one way or another, there are many who assume that Shemitah is Darabanan, or if not specifically only about Shemitah, then there's a question that maybe all of Kedushas Haaretz is Darabanan, Bezman Hazeh. That's the assumption that the Kiddush of Ezra was a Kiddush L'Shaita, was not a permanent Hekdush. So if that's the case, so then maybe that's not in effect nowadays, and the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael as a whole is Drabbanan. So if that's the case, so that's the opening premise, and also the fact that Ashas Hatzach, that that's a necessary part of it, because everyone agrees that ideally we would be observing Shemitah exactly as it's described. They wouldn't come onto this if it wasn't the feeling that it was very necessary from a survival perspective, an economic survival, an actual survival perspective, so that it's a Shas Hatzach. And together with that, they also bring in the point that this, with a Shas Hatzach, you can rely on a Daf Yochid. So what's the Daf Yochid? Is Rabbi Mizrahi, the Balamor and Gittin, that nowadays, without Yovel, the Balamor held that it's not even a Drabbanan, that it is a Midas Chasidus to observe Shemitah. There's a lot of argument about that. The Beis Halevi thought that he was only talking about Shemitah's Ksafin, and there's a whole back and forth about seeing him as a Das Yochid on this. So there are those who say, on the one hand, it's not even a Das Yochid, basically it's not talking about Shemitah's Karkoz, or completely rejected. And on the other hand, there are those who go the other direction, and who say that there are other Rishon who also have like this, and it's not such a Das Yochid, and it's something that can be relied upon B'Shas Hadchak. So part of that discussion, if you assume it's Rabbanan, it's also relevant to the major issue here, because then the question is, so is there such a thing as changing the halacha based on selling the land? That if you sell the land, does that make a difference for mitzvah atzliyos baris overall, for Shemitah specifically? So there is a machlokas, appears a number of times in Shas, in Mar Gittin, and Zavnitziyah, where the Gemara raises the question, do we say yesh kinyan lahafkia? Do we say that if the land is sold, will that be mafkia the land? Will that take the land out of a status of kedusha? And therefore, would it make a difference if the land was owned by non-Jews? Would it not be subject to the rules of Shemitah, or perhaps other halachos as well, of mitzvah satzliyos baretz? So this was a machlokas in of itself. And many Rishonim held that it doesn't make a difference, there ain't kinyan lahavkia. But there's also the possibility that Sefer HaTrumah and the Vilna Gaon, that if we assume that the Kedusha is midrabanan, so then that could also make a difference, and then maybe yesh kinyan lahavkia if what we're talking about is the Rabbanan. So again, that becomes the crucial detail, and we've talked a lot over this year about why the structure of Dinim Darabanan may allow for other interpretations or other applications. And just to very briefly note that one way that might be relevant here, if you say that Dinim Darabanan in general are mitzvos on the Gavra, so then that may be a part of the thinking here, that by its very definition, if we're relating to this Kedusha as a din d'rabbanan, if it's a din on the individual, so then it's not going to be perceived as something that is in the land itself and more connected to the ownership of the land, and then it makes more sense to say that indeed yesh kinyan lahafkia. There was also a major machlokus between the Beis Yosef and the Mabit, and the Ma'arit also, the Mabit and the son of the Ma'arit argued on the Beis Yosef about the status of land owned by non-Jews and the Kedusha that were assigned to the produce of those lands. The Beis Yosef was the one who understood that there is no Kedusha to that produce, which is an opinion that many subscribe to, although that's not all enough to fully justify the Hetzer Mechira because there are still many other questions. Beis Yosef wouldn't necessarily allow the selling of the land to create that status. That's a big, big debate. And also, it's not clear that he allows the working of the land either. It's just a question of the status of the produce that was going to emerge from land owned by non-Jews. So there is a lot of literature about this and a lot of debate. And there are a lot of other issues. So first of all, there's also a discussion whether Yesh Kinyan should be a different machlokus after the state. That's how Rav Gorin, for example, understood, and many others understood as well, that it's one thing to say that if you don't have an organized Jewish government, so then to sell your land, okay, so then maybe it's not Jewish land anymore. But if the whole country is Jewish, so then it's a bigger question whether any selling of the land within that context would change anything. So there's a lot of details that were a part of this whole machlokes, a lot that goes to the question of the legitimacy of the sale. I think we spoke about this a little bit when we talked about Mechir Summit. If I remember correctly, a lot of questions about the seriousness, about the commitment to the sale. And there's a lot of details which we're not going to go into great length right now, but that's all a part of the debate. But a bigger part of the debate, really, one of the major elements that contributed to a challenge and an objection is that there are many of the biggest detractors, the Hetzer Mechira, who felt that the truth is maybe it does work, but it's also to do. And that's because of the prohibition of Los Tachanim, that you're not supposed to sell land in Israel out of Jewish hands, and therefore, even if it would be effective in creating an exemption from the rules of Shemitah, it's still wrong to do for that reason, and a serious prohibition. So, for example, the Netziv, who was very opposed to the Hetzer, so he wrote that taking this approach is like running away from a lion just to run into a wolf, because you're trying to avoid the Isser Shemitah, which he's assuming is also an Isser Drabana, and in doing so, you're going to run into another worse Isser, an Isser Daraisa of Los Tachanim. What's the point of avoiding Shemitah just to violate Los Tachanim? He was very opposed. Parenthetically, I mentioned before the Beis HaLevi, the other Rosh Hashiv and Balazhin, both of them were very opposed. One of the points the Beis HaLevi was particularly strong in arguing on is that there are those who make the point that we're not 100% sure, it's machlokes, how exactly to count the Shemitah year. So maybe we could say that if you believe Shemitah is Drabanan, and we don't know exactly when the Shemitah year is, so maybe it's also a suffix Drabanan, if it really is Shemitah year, and you can be makel for that reason. So he was very upset about that approach. He said that's not the way suffix Drabanan Lukula works, and he would say that if you're going to try going down that path, you're going to end up having to be machmir on all 3 years that are possibly Shemitah. So he was very opposed to that. So the Netziv and the Beis HaLevi both expressed their opposition in many ways, and Los Tachanim was a big part of it. And there are various defenses to that, whether it's the fact that it was only a temporary sale, or maybe Los Tachanim should only apply to actual Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and maybe Arabs who were part of the sale, they believe in one God, so they're not actual of the Avodah Zarah. Or if Cook thought also if they really own land, maybe that should make a difference. So one major theme in the whole debate is that there is a question of perspective here. So yes, there is a problem with Los Tachanim, but Los Tachanim means that you shouldn't give up the ownership of the land. And here, in order to avoid Los Tachanim, so what happens? So we end up supporting the non-Jewish farmers because we don't want to buy from the produce of the Jewish farmers. We want to avoid the Hetzer Mechira. And some of these non-Jewish farmers are aligned with those who want to kill the Jews in Eretz Yisrael. So you end up supporting the enemies of the Jewish people in order to avoid Los Tachanim, those who are trying to actually take the land away completely from the Jewish people. That doesn't seem so advisable either. And those who argued that the control of the land by the Jews wasn't sustainable unless there was a way to deal with the economic issue. So they understood that they were worried about the broader Los Tachanim picture, the macro versus the micro. So this is a constant theme within this debate, that really everybody agrees with the same values. Everybody agrees that Shemitah is a crucial mitzvah, and everyone agrees that maintaining Jewish control and sovereignty and presence in Eretz Yisrael is a crucial value. And the question is how to get there. That recognizing we're in a bedieved situation right now and we don't have a full gula yet. So what's it going to take in order to get us to the point where Shemitah will be able to be fulfilled completely and Jewish sovereignty and presence in Eretz Yisrael will also be complete? So it's important to appreciate that as much as the details are very, very much in dispute. But we have Gedolei Torah on both sides, and they share the same values, and so often they get lost in the machlokas. And a part of the discussion also is that the Torah here in our parsha, the Torah says that the Tzivisi Esprachasi, the Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I know it's going to be hard, but I will command that the sixth year should produce more, so that we'll be able to survive. So some of the detractors said that here the Torah says, we know it's going to be hard, and yet there's a havtacha, you have to have bitachon. And others would respond, B'shul Mikutner, B'sfengel, they responded that, which we can understand, that bracha is when Shemitah is daraisa. So when Shemitah is daraisa, we're told that we have this havtacha together with the mitzvah, but if we don't have the full conditions for Shemitah daraisa, we don't necessarily have that haftarah either, and therefore we have to figure out how to approach it. But again, everyone's coming here from the same values and the same concerns and trying to figure out to the best of their ability how exactly to honor those ideals. So I think when we think about that and probably appreciate that, every discussion of the Het Mechira you find always, or at Shemitah B'chlal, always ends with, we should be zochet to the time when we're able to fulfill these mitzvot in their full sense. And just add to that, that yes, that's true, and a big part of how we're going to be zochet to that is dependent on how we talk about it. If we're able to properly respect the other opinions, we're able to appreciate that everyone's coming from the same place. We're all a part of one Am here, so that will be the biggest step towards getting us to the stage where we don't have to rely on any kind of compromises and be able to fully honor all of these values in ways that are not at all questionable. We'll also mention, just to connect the Rishon here and the Rishon of Parshas Bechukosai, that another theme of Shemitah, in addition to what we said before, is like the weekly Shabbos, that we need to be able to recharge our own batteries and pay attention to our spirituality. So the vision, which is not at all what happens nowadays because of all of the complexities around the things that Chassadik Lebrach wrote an article, which was reprinted many times in English and Hebrew, explaining how, so he called it a halachic tragedy, that nowadays Shemitah, nobody's doing it right. Whether you had the Hetzim Mechira, you don't have Hetzim Mechira, it's never going to fit the picture of what the Torah describes at this point. And no one should take too much pride in their own approach. But I would note here that the idea that the vision of the Torah, that we should all be able to take off the year and focus on our own spirituality and focus on learning Torah, because we also will all be in Kollel for the year, the idea that we should be able to direct our energies towards spiritual growth, so that really is the theme that Rashi tells us in the beginning of Parshas Bechukosai, that the idea of Bechukosai Teilechu, that Shihei Amelum B'Torah, that we should be toiling, that we should be working in Torah. Even though they say walking is not necessarily our imagery for hard work, it means a walk in the park, a walk rather than a run. But as Maral explains, we mean to be moving, we mean to always be growing, we need to always be growing in Torah. And often that comes from responding to situations that are challenging and working. So on the one hand, Shemitah is a vision of taking things easy from our daily labors, from our working the land, so that we can divert our energies towards spiritual efforts. But also sometimes it goes in the other direction, and that we're able to be energized more by responding to challenge and to difficulties. And that's a big part of where we're at right now in our current isolation, that we are very much out of our comfort zone, in our comfort zone, that we're at home, which could be for many of us comfortable place, but in terms of the context in which we are productive in the Beis Medrash and in the Yeshiva with our Chavrusas and with our Chaverim and Seder, so we're out of our comfort zone, so to speak, in terms of what's normally been conducive to our accomplishing and learning. And it forces us to adapt and to recognize how we can take advantage of the positives of those situations and make sure that our growth continues and that we build new skill sets that we're able to take with us into, God willing, the next phase when things are better, when this crisis has passed. It should only be soon. And we should be able to harness all of the skills that we develop as we adapt to different kinds of challenges and to be amelim b'torah, to be people who recognize that when things are harder, so then we have to work harder to accomplish. And when things are easier, we're able to take that commitment to hard work to accomplish even more. Sometimes commented, people ask, so nowadays we have all these databases and all these search engines that we're able to find Kol Torah Kulo at the push of a button. Is that good or bad? So the truth is, it's good, but you have to be able to have the attitude that if nowadays we accomplish the same as they did in previous generations with much less effort, so that's a bad thing. But if we use the wonderful technology that we have to work just as hard but accomplish so much more because there is greater assistance that we have from these tools, so then that will be a wonderful thing. So to be able to preserve this attitude of amelim b'torah, whether we're given a lot to work with or we're given very little to work with, whether the circumstances are helpful or the circumstances are challenging, we're amelim b'torah either way, and we learn to be amelim b'torah under different circumstances, and that becomes a very valuable skill for us and a part of our personality and a part of how we approach everything that we do. And we'll once again reiterate that we hope that this very difficult situation, it should soon be over, but that we should be able to use the experience to come out people who are stronger, more committed, and through that, more accomplished in our ongoing and ever-escalating Avodas Hashem. I wish you all a safe and healthy and productive and elevated Shabbos.